All right, what's up, Jason? This is Gabe. How's it going, guys?
Somebody's birthday today. Happy birthday, Gabe.
Is it your birthday?
Not yet.
My birthday.
It's your birthday first.
That's right.
But we share the birthday month. My birthday's in a few weeks.
Well, happy early birthday, Jason.
Thank you, and happy birthday to you. So I feel so special that I get to spend this birthday with you in a podcast.
I've been looking forward to this moment all day long, Jason.
Was that? I mean, I know you can't say that's what you wished for on your birthday, because then it came true. So was this what you wished for when you blew out the candles today?
If I told you, then it wouldn't come true.
But now, it's coming true.
Don't want to jinx it. Yeah, we had some family over at my house tonight, and my daughter, she baked a cake for my birthday, and my parents came over, and it was a nice visit. And so we're putting the kids to bed a little bit later than normal, just because, you know, it took a while for everybody to say goodnight and goodbye and all that stuff. And as I'm putting my 7-year-old to bed, I lean over, and she asks me, "Hey, are you going anywhere tonight? Like, do I have to run an errand or do anything like that?" And I said, "No." And whenever I say no, she reaches up and she messes up my hair. She just loves to do that. Just loves to. So she's about to reach up and mess up my hair, right?
Uh-huh.
And then she goes, "Oh, wait, I know you have a podcast tonight. I should leave it alone so that you look good for Jason." Well, thanks.
It's thank you for not messing up your hair. It looks nice.
So funny.
Oh, man. Well, let's talk about Out of the Silent Planet, Chapter 7.
Capítulo 7.
And we're finally getting some action. I will say C.S. Lewis made up for, in my eyes, the last chapter. This chapter was really good.
Yeah, no, I think you had to have the last chapter to set up this one. I love how it starts with the same kind of attitude that we ended the last one, mm-hmm. where Divine turns to Ransom and he's like having a doze. And I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what we were saying. He's like, his head was in the clouds, you know, and even Divine's like, "Hey, you having a doze there? You asleep? What's going on? Wake up." You know, but then the line right after that, the Divine was a bit blasé about new planets by now. Like, he was already like, this is old hat now for Divine, you know. He's a pro. He's like, noob, you know. But at one point in time, this was new for Divine and for Ransom. I mean, for Weston, I mean. And there would have been some degree of sense of wonder or excitement or curiosity that they would have exhibited, maybe not in the same way that Ransom is, but yeah, of course they would have had the same type of a shared experience.
So they have landed on Melicandre, and they are preparing to exit the spaceship. And as they are exiting, my favorite part was them kind of grabbing, where was it? It was the revolvers in their hands. And I love Ransom's thought process was, is that for the Sorns or for me?
Yeah. No, it's his head's, you know, it's kind of interesting. So like, definitely that would think like his head's in the game in the sense of, is that for me? Is that for the Sorns? I need to be on the lookout. I still need to be present. But at the same time, he's still taking in all these new surroundings. I mean, he gets out of the ship and, you know, just the way that even the landscape is hitting him for the first time, to where it's hard to discern. And, you know, it's like when you see something for the first time or a picture that you don't really know exactly what you're looking at, but then once you start to discern, like, oh, that's what that is, and then that's all you see. You start to see it clearly. But I love how at first it talks about how it's like, you know, this mass of water paintings or watercolors. The imagery.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I even felt a little disoriented whenever I was first trying to read this, in the sense of, I love that. What he's talking about is that watercolor painting where it's that pale colors of red and blue and pinkish color. It was a great way to describe it in my mind of like, okay, him trying to like feel with his hands and this pink stuff that was soft and faintly, and then kind of realizing, oh, this is vegetation. It's not dirt or sand or anything else.
Or like there's like a flat blue and he's like, oh, okay, that's a lake or water or a river. That's, mm-hmm. that must be what that is, you know? And just kind of like, I don't know, when you wake up and things are kind of groggy at first and then they start to come into vision, you know, or like when you're looking through a camera and you're trying to focus it, right? And things are like blurry, but then as they come into focus, you start to see with clarity. And so, I mean, he doesn't know what he's looking at. This is a completely new experience. And, you know, it's this new perspective that he's having to go through and take all this new information in and try and discern it through his experiences that he knows before. So like all he knows is Earth, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, everything is trying to compare it to that. I was thinking about like we do that, you know what I mean? Like whenever we have a new experience, we always see it through our own personal bias or our own personal experience. Like we weigh it up against that. And there was even a line further down when he says something like, before anything else, he learned that Malacandra was beautiful. And he even reflected how odd it was that this possibility had never entered into his speculations.
Yeah.
Like, that's not even something that he could even entertain as a possibility because his perspective, his point of view is so specific as to what something must be. So it's like he's very quickly seeing that once again, my horizons are being broadened. You know, my point of view is being expanded. And I'm seeing that I was short-sighted before, you know.
I think it's that. And I think it's also his mindset as far as he's moving from a pessimistic view to an optimistic view in the sense of, you know, when you're pessimism, you're always going to think the worst things. It's going to be dead. It's going to be a desert. It's going to be barren. It's going to be a wasteland. Nothing is going to be growing. But when you come optimistically, you're like, maybe there's something else out there. Maybe there's something beautiful perhaps in this situation. And that's what he's finding out. What I love here, and I could clearly see this like in a movie, if they ever decide to make a movie out of this, is Ransom coming out all wide-eyed and bushy-tailed and just in awe, and then immediately gets gruffed and sideswiped by Weston, be like, move.
Get out. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Just like that record scratch.
There's this wonder. Oh, this wonder as he's singing, you know. It's like you know, like Jurassic Park when they see like the majesty of the dinosaurs. Move, you know? Get out of here. Let me out.
And so they get out, and Ransom is amazed because he sees some huts, and he's like, they make huts like us. And I love Divine's like, no, dude, we do that. Humans do that. That's ours. We made that, dummy.
Yeah. They build houses? We do. Guess again. So, yeah, they see these huts, these houses, and then just immediately the task at hand gets reality slaps him right in the face, and he's got to get to work. They've got to unload the spaceship. And so that's what the next several hours is just consumed with. It's just moving back and forth and back and forth and unloading until Divine lobbies Weston to stop for lunch.
Come on, man.
And, you know, Weston obviously resists it, but Divine, you know, he's just got this, he's a salesman, you know, he's got this way about him to kind of like force it to happen. But, you know, in amidst all of this, Ransom is taking every opportunity that he can, even if it's just stealing glances, to take in as much as he can of his surroundings. You know, that he's discovered that they're like on a peninsula of sorts.
Yeah.
And there's these, there's the landscape in the distance, this kind of, these trees that are like tall cylinders, right?
Like an umbrella, like as he was describing, like an umbrella turned inside out.
Yeah, or like how heavy the leaves must be, that they must be like, it reminded him of like water plants because the leaves were so large and broad that there's no way they could be supported just on their own in the air. They would need like water to help kind of lift and support them. But he was like marveling at how this could even work, how this could be. And like, what was it like the leaves were so large that it could be like the size of a raft, right? Something right. Along those lines.
A canoe or something like that.
Or how about like the waves of the water, right? We're not just like these normal, like gentle waves of a lake or a river, but it was these massive spikes,
right?
You know, and I, so as he was saying this, talking about the trees, the water, and I get the sense that like there's a lot of just vertical growth here on the planet, you know, that things just go up and maybe some out, but they ascend, you know. And I was thinking about the gravitational pull of the planet. And it said that that it's less than Earth, you right. know, it's a long short of it, you know, and they felt like, oh my gosh, this is, you know, intolerable almost. But in reality, it was actually less than what even Earth is. And right. so I'm thinking, well, okay, so the gravitational pull is less. So these plants, the waves, everything is able to just soar almost, you know?
I'm a simpleton. And you know what I thought of? Dr. Seuss. I was thinking okay. of Dr. Seuss books and various books.
Just the imagery there.
Yeah, the really tall, skinny, colorful purple and pink trees and really big, fluffy leaves. And obviously these are much, much bigger. I don't know why. That's what came to my mind.
It's a little trippy, though. Just the colors that you're imagining, you know? And then
just, again, like you said, like that's all I could picture in my mind because that's my experience of trippy like vegetation, if you will, has been illustrated in my brain.
Dr. Seuss.
Sorry, Doc. We also were seeing that it's cold, if I understood it right, or snowing, or like what he interpreted as snow.
Was it? I didn't catch that.
It
was cool and crisp. It was cool and crisp.
Or maybe it was like it was. Maybe it was cool and crisp like a snowy day or, you know, like it used to back in his
like
home.
Like a winter day or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
But it's cold. Mm-hmm. It's like, quote unquote, winter to him.
And again, we're seeing like all through it, he's just relating it back to his own experiences. Even like he's seeing these things in the background that are like a rose-colored cloud-like mass. And what does he say? It says it looked like the top of a gigantic red cauliflower. Or a huge bowl of red soap suds. I mean, it's just everything that like, what is that? You know? And so then you're imagining like massive red cauliflower tops, you know, and you're like, what could that be? You know? And then just this forest of these trees that are these tall, you know, huge things. And then of course, you know, the work is just being driven, you know, and then something interrupts their work.
Yeah, they are going along their business, and then all of a sudden, Ransom notices Weston and Divine kind of stop and suddenly look at each other. And you can tell they're communicating without using words. And they get their pistols ready, and they put them by their side. And this alarms Ransom of like, okay. And so he starts looking out beyond, and he's looking at this dazzling blue, I like this, dazzling blue soda water. And he's saying, wait.
Yeah, the water is effervescent.
Yeah.
That's just another little detail. Yeah. That's why it's like soda water, you know?
And notices crazy. Something out there that wasn't there before. And it's very long, tall, and slender. But easily three times as tall as a human person, if I was understanding this correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And
white.
And yeah. And again, just like with everything in this chapter, his eyes are having to adjust to it's almost as if like he's seen it, but his brain is taking half a beat to catch up to what process. He's seen.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
He goes on, Divine stiffened like a dog, and basically Ransom knows, like, okay. He's like, Ransom, gulping down the last of his whiskey, rose two. He's like, I probably should take a shot real quick.
Oh, yeah. So this actually happens like at the very end of their lunch, yeah. Which, by the way, like even in the lunch, he's like, I better eat because he's still planning his escape.
And let me
he's
just
still looking for opportunities.
Yeah. Let me pause right there. Like, this is the chapter that I think I wish more of the thought process, like this is the thought process that I was like, yes, this is the Ransom that I know, like I was thinking he was capable of, just constantly like you said, yes, he's observing his surroundings just so he gets a bearing straight. Why? Because he's also trying to plan, like, is it plausible to escape? How should I escape? Because he also talked about in the early part of the chapter how he made sure that he still has his knife under his belt.
That's right.
In the back.
That's
he
right.
Make sure that he has that. So, you know, he is thinking this through, and that's the part where I guess I was just frustrated in the previous, because it didn't seem like he just kind of surrendered to the situation, which, again,
see,
understand.
I told you, man. I told you.
Understand. But
you
now I'm like,
faith
okay,
in this, and
I'm
Elwin.
Getting there. So, yeah, they, there seem to be some paler and slender plants. He all he can equate to is, like, instead of a bean, it's a plant.
So yeah, because like what you said, he's plotting his escape the whole time. He's forcing himself to eat at first, and then of course he realizes how hungry he is. But he's realizing this may be the last meal I have in quite a while. Yeah. I need to eat as much as I can. So he ate everything, drank everything, and so yeah, like you said, here, you know, Ransom gulping down the last of his whiskey. He's like, oh, let me get the rest of this out real quick, you know.
Mm-hmm.
and then he sees these almost like plants. These white, slender, spindly, wavy objects, things, you know, like what does it say, like old drawings of men or something like that that you would see in a cave,
mm-hmm.
or
mm-hmm.
or just, you know,
old books of archaeology, and mm-hmm. He realizes that there's not just one or two but six were standing there,
right?
And he was amazed, and I actually had to look this up, because again, some of these words are not in our lexicon anymore, where he says, flexible looking distortions of earthly bipeds. I was like, what is a biped? And it's
two legs.
Yeah, I know. Now I'm like, oh yeah, that, but I was like, what is he talking about? And I'm like, oh, it's just any animal. But in the definition, excuse me, it's any animal on their two legs, so they could have
that moves on two legs,
yeah
specifically.
So
yeah.
Obviously in his mind he's like, how are these capable of being on two legs? This is
mm-hmm.
crazy. And then he sees them coming towards them, meaning Ransom, Divine, and Weston.
Yeah, and they're across the water. There's like a, you know, like I said, it's like a peninsula, and so they're almost all the way surrounded by water, but not quite. And there's a more shallow, narrower side, and then there's another side that looks, it's like vast and huge, huge shore. And this is on the more narrow shore. It's not quite as much of a distance, because they're like making some kind of a motion mm-hmm. towards them. And they're obviously visible, and they can hear some degree of sound coming from them. I like how he just he turns to flee, and then immediately finds himself gripped by Divine. And now here we go, the rubber is meeting the road.
Well, and right before being gripped, I think he also talks about them. He got a very quick glimpse of their faces, the thin, unnaturally long, drooping noses, drooping mouths of half idiotic solemnity. And just that's when he's gripped. And this is where that fight or flight mentality we all have. And we know Ransom's is flight. He's like,
he's got to get out of there.
Got to go.
Yeah. He's outnumbered, you know? He has sized it up, and he's like, this is not a place for me. So when you are reading this description of the Saurians, what are you imagining? And I'll tell you what I was picturing.
I pictured something. How do I describe this? Like the Elephant Man. I don't know if you've ever seen that play or that book.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's kind of what I was picturing. Just
don't look at me.
Yeah, just the long drooping nose, mouth, and the half idiotic solemnity, just kind of having that non-expressional face going with it, and the mouth being too long, so it's very narrow but long gaping. So if you opened your mouth and made an O, but it's very long oval and very scary, kind of looking that, like a horror film where the demon opens their mouth, but it's four times as wide as it ought to be.
That's not quite what I imagined. You know that painting? I think it's called The Scream. Oh,
yeah, yeah.
You know, where that guy's got his hands up to his mouth, uh-huh, and his mouth is really stretched and open, right, and long. He's got this kind of oval face. So I imagined that face, like that head, on, you know, those things whenever like a car dealership or, uh-huh, something like has a grand opening, and, uh-huh, it's that thing that like it's tall, uh-huh, and skinny and has the air blowing through it. It's like a tube and it's, yep, wavy and, yep, like spindly and whatever. So like if those two things merged, that's what a Saurian was for me. Yours is a little bit more intimidating though.
Yeah. You know, I don't know.
Which, if you've never seen anything like that before and you see, true, it moving, it'd be creepy. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
For sure.
So he's trying to get away.
So he's trying to run away. Be a fool. And Weston says something peculiar here, and I don't know what to make of this, where he's like, they want us to go across. And it says, you know, both the men were forcing him to the water's edge. So it's like, wait, so they're wanting to go across, and then a lot happens in this last paragraph, two paragraphs.
A lot happens.
So, you know, he, meaning Ransom, he is trying to put, he planted his feet, he's putting him on the ground, does not want to budge, screaming.
Yeah, he's fighting him.
Fighting, mm-hmm, slashing, crawling, trying to get away. You know, Weston is trying to drag him in there, and then Weston, trying to kind of resolve everything, is just, he fires his pistol in the air, if I understand that right. Ransom suddenly fired his revolver, not across the water, but up it. That to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, like the way I read it was like he was not firing at them, but just kind of up in the air, basically.
No, no. Not. That's not what I understood at all.
No, it's fine. I mean, yeah, and I could be reading this wrong. Like,
yeah, so they're in the struggle, like you're saying. Exactly. Right. But then suddenly, a much louder and less articulate noise broke from the creatures on the far bank. So, like, all of a sudden, those Saurians, it's not – remember, so, like, they made some kind of a sound. And that's when Weston was like, they want us to go across. So they communicated in some way, and that's what Weston was able to interpret, and let's go across. And now they're fighting and struggling with Ransom. But then all of a sudden there's a different sound. This is not the same sound they were saying before. This is louder. It's you know, just, you know, chaos is starting to happen there. You know, that there's something going on with the creatures on the far bank. And then all of a sudden Weston also – I feel like his focus moves away from Ransom because he relaxes his grip, and he pulls out his gun, and he shoots his revolver, not really across the water, but up it. And so that description there, not across the water like at the Saurians, but kind of up the water, like in between the two masses of land, kind of up the water. And then he's seeing – Ransom seeing like, what's going on? Why is he doing that? And he sees the direction that Weston had fired this gun. And what does he see? He sees this line of foam like the track of a torpedo speeding towards them. I mean, this is like Jaws on steroids is what I'm imagining. Like, right. Da-da. Like there's some kind of a creature. And this is why the Saurians on the other bank were starting to like – yell and scream or make some kind of a different noise to alert everybody. Hey, look, watch out, look, because they were going to have these guys cross the river, you know. But obviously there's this creature coming, and this is what Weston is firing at, not up in the air to get people's attention, but rather he sees this too. And this is a new foe, a new danger, and he's firing at that.
Right.
And so this is where opportunity presents itself.
Right. So that was the part that I was confused on. So thank you. Because I was like, wait, why is he firing up when...
And that's a weird thing to do.
Because I knew he... I mean, I knew he wasn't firing at the Sorns or whatever they are over there. You know, I knew he wasn't firing at them. He was firing at something else, whether it was just to get someone's attention or whatever. Because obviously I knew, okay... And then immediately, like you said, this monster, as it's being put in here, comes up and basically gets Divine, because Divine starts shrieking and cursing and slips and collapses into the water. Ransom scene, a snapping jaw between them, deafening noises. Weston shoots at it again. He basically is meaning Ransom is finally freed from both Weston and Divine's grip. And Ransom takes this opportunity to bolt.
He just bolts, man. He goes and goes and goes.
And doesn't care what he hears from behind of, like, come back, you know, whatever. He's like, nope, I'm out. Peace out, y'all. And as it ends, he is running up a steep incline, and now he's running through purple shadow between the stems of another forest of huge plants.
And that's where we leave into it. The unknown. And we don't know what's going to happen next. Ooh. He's just running. You know, what a crazy scene, though, you know, to end this on. You've got the Sorns have finally presented themselves. You know, you've got Ransom. You've got Weston and Divine with the guns forcing Ransom to into the water to try and cross it. And then out of nowhere, this beast appears. It takes everybody's attention away. And this is the opportunity for Ransom to just bolt. And so you've got Ransom, you know, running as fast as he can through, you know, the forest. And he has no idea where he is or where he's going, what he even might encounter. And in the background, you've got, you know, screaming and fighting and bullets flying. And who knows what happens to Divine, if he makes it out or not. Or crazy.
So that's where we
Jason,
are. Yes.
What do you think is going to happen next?
I knew. Okay. I think somehow Divine survives. I don't think C.S. Lewis is a George R. R. Martin type where he kills off all these main characters in his books. So my prediction, somehow Divine survives. Weston, is able to keep him alive and... You know, maybe he's badly wounded somehow by this monster and he needs to be first aid, all that good stuff. So I see that happening. Ransom. He's running into the great unknown. I think he will come in contact with another species that's a part of Melacondra. I think it's going to be a new one, not the monsters that were in the lake and not the creatures with the long noses and faces. I think this is going to be another species.
Not the scream inflatables.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think...
Like an Ewok or something or...
Yeah. I'll say... Okay. here's a crazy prediction. I predict at first he will see... something tiny, and I'd be like, oh, that's so cute, that's so adorable. Okay. And then he looks up and sees, like, maybe that's like the baby version, and then he looks up and he sees the mama version, which is very, very huge, just like everything else on this planet. And then he freaks out again. And then he finally manages to meet back up with Divine and Ransom. I know that's not a really flashy or fun thing, but I think that's my prediction for the immediate future.
So you think he's going to somehow circle back to them because that's the devil you know versus the devil you don't?
Yeah, I think he'll finally come to his senses. Like, after seeing this new creature, and he's going to probably kind of settle back down, calm back down, and go, okay, maybe this was not the best idea to just fly out with just a knife and nothing else. But we'll see.
Is Jason right? Is Jason wrong? Stay tuned. Tune in next week to the next episode of Reading Your Way to Heaven to find out.
I just want to end it like that. I thought that was perfect, Gabe. So, I mean, I'm probably wrong. I'm probably way off. Gabe's probably laughing inside hysterically right now.
Hey, guys, thanks for hanging out with us. Every week.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it.
Seriously, though, tune in again.
I will give a shout out that we actually have had some listeners from Great Britain that have listened from across the pond. Thank you guys so much. And I profusely apologize for my horrible accent for our brothers and sisters.
What's funny about that is he was totally unapologetic prior to knowing that we had listeners from Great Britain.
Oh, they know it's all in good fun. At least I hope.
It's in good fun, huh?
Yeah, totally.
That's good.
Yeah.
All right.
No, but I appreciate it. And seriously, y'all, thank you so much. Share it with people. Let us know what you think in the comments. And the best way to get hold of us and to just, if you want to reach out, is going to readingyourwaytoheaven.fireside.fm. Until the next chapter, we'll see you next week. God bless y'all. Gabe, love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye.